Thank you, Abby, for that meditation, that reflection. I had the privilege of reading that a little bit earlier in the week. Abby shared it to me, and I've already sent it to a couple people now. That poem is especially meaningful to me because if you've ever had the opportunity to take something that was used in a harmful way and kind of rethinking it and reprocess it. So I particularly identify with that because we grew up, as you know, in a pretty conservative environment. Every day we read 5 Psalms and 1 Proverb, because if you do it that way, you can read the entire book of Psalms and the entire book of Proverbs every month. And as if that were not enough, we also memorized and prayed and recited Psalm 91 every day. But we didn't just do it like, you know, King James Version. That would have been cool and spiritual sounding. We memorized it in the Amplified Version. Anybody familiar with the Amplified Bible? Maybe not to many. Okay. Think of the Amplified Bible as someone who took the Bible and then said, how can we make every verse like 2 or 3 times longer? And that's essentially what it was. Psalm 91 started out, he that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall remain stable and fixed under the shadow of the Almighty, whose power no foe can withstand. That was just the first verse. Yes, it's still memorized. It's still stuck in my head after all these years. So sometimes we need the unmapping of crows. Sometimes we need to rethink things in different ways. And this morning I want to talk about, ironically, silence. I want to begin with just a moment of silence, if we can. We did this in the pre-talk, and sometimes we do this in our gatherings. We just had a silence for the reflection, but I want to just take maybe just 10 seconds here. We're not going to take long. I want to take with our eyes closed, and if you can just put your hands on your chest and just bring a moment to bring yourself here to this space and just see where you are at. And what's coming up for you is you just take this brief moment to check in with yourself in silence. You can blink your eyes open and bring yourself back to the space. And if you're like most of us, you recognize that silence is not often silent, that we have a steady stream of thoughts and conversations going on up there. And I don't want to just think about silence from this exclusionary standpoint, as in something that we need to get rid of everything bad so that we can make space for the good, which is the silence and the space. But I want to think about silence as this raw matter from which everything else emerges. I love Alan Watts, and he describes it this way. He says, silence is the origin of sound, just as space is the origin of the stars, and woman is the origin of man. If you listen and pay close attention to what is, you will discover that there is no past, there is no present, and there is no future. There is only what is. You cannot hear yourself listening. You live in the eternal now, and you are that. It really is extremely simple, and that is the way it is. I love Alan Watts because he says some of the most profound things, and then he follows it up by saying, and it's really simple. That's just the way it is. Yeah, but what do you mean that silence is the space from which everything else emerges? What are we talking about here? So silence, especially in this time and the space of the year, is crucial. All the spiritual traditions, and especially the contemplative ones, value silence as an essential part of deeper knowing. Within the Jewish creation story, it began out of the silence of a formless void, and then God spoke words out of the silence, and things emerged. There was a pregnant silence, a simple space where nothing existed, and then out of that came everything. In Islam, silence is considered one of the first and important stages of worship. In the Baha'i faith, there is a verse that says that the essence of true safety is to observe silence, and to look at the end of things is to renounce the world. In Hinduism, the Bhagavad Gita says that silence is one of the virtues and the disciplines of the mind. In Buddhism, in the Vimalakirti Sutra, Manjushri asked the assembled Bodhavitas to describe non-duality. We're told that the assembled Bhagavad Gitas that were there each tried to attempt to describe the concept of non-duality. We're told that there were 31 explanations given, and each one degraded into duality. And then the question was then posed to a layman, Vimalakirti. And Vimalakirti responded with silence. And more silence. And more silence. And Manjushri then praised him and said, he gets it. This is the non-duality. He is the one who has answered correctly. Within the faith tradition that I and many of you were raised in, Christianity, there's a stream of contemplative practices that have lost the appeal for many years because we value words and books as the source of knowledge. Someone who has read more words and collected more books must surely be more knowledgeable. But within contemplative Christianity, there is the necessary presence of silence as a way of connecting to the deeper truth of everything that is. One of my favorite contemplatives, Thomas Merton, who bridged the gap between the East and the West in Christianity and Eastern thought, he said, gradually, after deliberately choosing quiet times with God. Now, he writes from a Christian standpoint, so you can substitute here this word that he uses for God as in everything. But what he's saying is this. He said, after deliberately choosing quiet times with God, our hearts begins to sharpen to the perception of God's presence. The quiet of God begins to speak and direct us. And our hearts becomes more finely tuned to the frequency that God uses to speak. You see, Thomas Merton and many others like him said that the way that God speaks is not just through the words, and he might even say that that's not even the best way. That the words are birthed out of silence, but there is a deeper knowing that comes from the space between the words. Silence has not always been a practice I've been comfortable with. Growing up, we prayed a lot, and you pray with words. Or if you're really spiritual, you can pray in tongues, which we did, and that's just another form of words that don't mean anything. But words were a part of the way that we connected to God, through our prayers. And I learned as a kid to pray well beyond my years. And I could give really, really good prayers. And as a pastor, of course, you're the one who's called upon anytime a prayer invocation is needed. And so you can very quickly get used to the concept of talking to God, communicating to the divine through the form of words that are spoken. So as I began to dig into these contemplative practices and go on some retreats, I discovered the power of allowing the silence to speak. One of the first times I did this practice with this psalm Psalm 46:10 is a one that you're probably familiar with. Be still and know that I am God. I was at a retreat where we took that and used that psalm as an invitation, a gateway into silence, with each phrase being a further gateway towards the source of everything. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know. Be still. Be. I love practices like that because it walks us backwards from the place where we're most safe and comfortable. The words that we think describe the divine mystery. And as we walk backwards from there, we move into silence, and the lack of words somehow becomes more encapsulating of the truth than any words that we could use. It's strange. There's a branch of theology being simply what we talk about when we talk about God. And there's this branch of theology called apophatic theology. It comes from the Greek apo, which means without or other than, and phanai, which means speaking. So simply, it's a theology that uses anything other than words. Another Latin phrase is via negativa, or to speak about things that are true in light of the absences. And it says that every single word that we use when we try to talk about the divine mystery, as soon as it is spoken, it begins to immediately fall short. And that the most accurate, the most true and genuine way that we can encounter the divine is not by any words that anyone can use to describe, but by simply resting in silence. Apophatic, saying, no, the most in-depth accumulated libraries of writings about the great mystery doesn't come as close to encapsulating it as simply sitting in silence with the great mystery. I especially lately, these years, find myself returning over and over to indigenous wisdom, because so many of the great world religions have had and taken the global stage, and so many indigenous voices have held such deep truth that we don't often give credit to or listen to. There was a Sioux scholar, her name is Ella Cara Deloria. I loved how she said it. She was late 19th century Sioux scholar, wrote extensively, and she said it this way. She said, we Indians know about silence. We're not afraid of it. In fact, for us, silence is more powerful than words. Our elders were trained in the ways of silence, and they handed this knowledge to us. Observe, listen, and then act, they would tell us. That was the manner of living. With you, white people, it is just the opposite. You learn by talking. You reward the children that talk the most at school. In your parties, you all try to talk at the same time. In your work, you are always having meetings in which everyone interrupts everybody and all talk 5, 10, or 100 times. And you call that solving a problem. When you are in a room and there is silence, you get nervous. You must fill the space with sounds, so you talk compulsory, even before you know what you are going to say. People should regard their words as seeds. They should sow them, she says, and then allow them to grow in silence. Our elders taught us that the earth is always talking to us and that we should keep silent in order to hear her. There are many voices besides ours, many voices. I'm especially grateful for this insight into silence from this indigenous perspective. Because through the years, I've leaned into silence. I can't say that I'm entirely comfortable with it, but I'm learning to sit with the discomfort. I'm not pushing the silence away. I'm embracing it because out of the silence is born deeper truths and deeper knowings. I would dare say that I could come up here week after week and share insight after insight and talk that would cause your brains to contemplate these deep truths, but you could, in the privacy of your own space, sit in silence without reading a word or saying a word. And things can be birthed in you that no word can describe. During this season, I want to learn to embrace the wisdom of winter, to acknowledge the things that are born in the quiet. Yesterday was the winter solstice. I've said before, we don't want to so quickly move into these brighter, longer days without giving space for what needs to be born and nurtured in the quiet. Outside right now, the ground is covered in snow. It's frozen. It's cold. But it's not dead. Below the surface, things are germinating, waiting to be born. Animals are actively working. Things are happening. And out of the silence, we so often want to move so quickly into words. We know this if you've ever taken any type of communication coaching class for yourself in business or maybe maritally in a relationship, to know how frequently we listen not to hear the words that are being spoken, but we're so quickly moving to what we're going to say in response that we're not actually listening to the words. I'm guilty of this all the time. It's built into our culture, isn't it? To so quickly come up with responses. And if you grew up in any kind of debate class and stuff, that's drilled into you. You're listening to that person, but you're immediately breaking down everything they're saying, and you're coming up with your response, your argument. And you probably know, if you've ever been in any of those heated exchanges, that the kind of, quote, conversations where this person is talking and this one is listening so that they can respond, and then as soon as they get the floor, they're talking, but this person is immediately going to respond back. Nothing's happening. Words are being spoken, but nothing is being said. You're listening, but you're not hearing. So listen. Listen to the wisdom of this season and what this season has to say. In these last few minutes, I want to rethink this idea of silence just a bit, because perhaps you're thinking that we should all go on a silent retreat and and spend days in silence and cultivate all these monastic practices. And if anybody, has anybody been on a silent retreat, even for a half day, a silent lunch, anything like that? You know it's challenging. It's really, really tough. And it's a wonderful practice, and we definitely should be doing more of that. But there's a gentleman, his name is Gordon Hempton. He has a title that, had I known this as a kid and understood it, I probably would have pursued this. He's an acoustic ecologist. He studies the diminishing sounds of silence in nature, and he has field recordings of silence, but it's the silence of nature. And he would say, and he does it, he says it this way. He said, silence is not the absence of something, but the presence of everything. I'll be sharing some of his recordings. There's some great online playlists and things that will go out in the email this week. But I've frequently connected with his sounds and his recordings because it's a silence that is a silence without words, but it is full of everything. He goes on to say, in his book, which again is a great book to recommend, is called One Square Inch of Silence, One Man's Quest to Preserve Quiet. He says, it is the presence of time undisturbed. It can be felt within the chest. Silence nurtures our nature, our human nature, and lets us know who we are. Left with a more receptive mind and a more attuned ear, we become better listeners, not only to nature, but to each other. Silence is like scouring sand. When you are quiet, the silence blows against your mind and etches away everything that is soft and unimportant. More than ever before, we need to rediscover our heritage of the silence, to know that that is where we come from. Before we ever uttered our first scream after being born, we were surrounded by our mother in 9 months of silence. Not a silence of the absence of noise, but a presence of everything. Because we know that the fetus already begins to absorb the vibrational energy of the mother, to begin to recognize the voices. We come from silence. We will return to silence. And this winter, this season, the wisdom that winter offers us is to make peace with the times of silence. Not so that we can rush to fill them with words, but so that we can let the silence speak to us. That things can be born out of the fertile soil of the silence that we cultivate. Because within all of the mystical contemplative traditions, silence is where the mystery is encountered. I want to close with one more line from Gordon Hempton. I actually emailed him this week because I was kind of fanboying a bit. I have his album called Atlantic Sunrise. It's a Cape Cod sunrise. It's about an hour of the sounds of these waves recorded and just I can't describe the sound of waves being beautiful without like describing this album so perfectly. And it's not just sound waves. It's not that. It's something deeper because it's connecting to this nature, this birthright that we have. And so I emailed him, and he's about to embark on a series of trips this coming year to a quiet preserve in South America. And he's leading these eco-retreats to experience nature in some of the quietest, most remote places in the world. And these quiet sanctuaries are places where the sounds of humanity and machinery and all these things are guarded against as a form of pollution. As a matter of fact, the Nobel Prize-winning bacteriologist, Robert Koch, in 1905, he said, the day will come when we will have to fight noise as inexorably as we will cholera and the plague. And he's right, isn't it? Because it's not just in nature, it's in our daily life all around us. And we know what it feels like when we turn it off. Wayne used the example of anybody who's ever been on a sailboat and you've motored out from harbor and you get far enough out and that moment when the motor goes off, the waves, I'm seeing smiles and heads nodding because you instantly know what that's like. There's a peace that comes from that. Gordon, who's traveled the world recording sounds, connecting with silence, leading people in eco-retreats, he says, if I were asked to choose my favorite sound in the world, I doubt I could do it easily. If I were forced, I might say it's the dawn chorus of songbirds, the sound of the rising sun as it circles the globe. But that would disregard the murmur of winged insects as heard over the square miles of the Kalahari Desert. And if that were my favorite sound, that would ignore the hoot of an owl and the way that it bounces off the cypress trees in Louisiana, and also ignore the clang of a church bell after it is echoed down the narrow stone streets of an Austrian village. If I had to supply a single answer to that question, he said, my favorite sound in the world would be the sound of anticipation. The silence of a sound about to be heard. And the space between the noises. Friends, may we experience in the midst of the deep, dark solstice of this season, the peace and the rest that is born out of the silence that we create space for. May we guard and protect those moments of silence in our space and in our lives. And most importantly, may we learn to listen and listen to the wisdom of nature and what the world is speaking all around us, and listen to the depths of wisdom that comes up from within that we can only hear when we create space to listen. Namaste, friends.